Welcome back to the Brittany Hughes Show, everybody. Happy Thursday. Hope you have big weekend plans. Going to go do something fun. I don't know about y'all where y'all live, but here in the mid-Atlantic, we are having an unseasonably warm winter, and it is awesome. I can't stand the cold, in case I haven't told you before. Pretty sure I've been open about that. I hate the cold. I don't even like the cold when it snows. A lot of people are like, oh, well, I can deal with the cold as long as it snows. I hate it. I hate it. Here in Virginia, whenever it snows, it turns into slush in like a second. Like, it's really pretty for about 5 minutes, and then it's just muddy and wet and melty and gross. And the kids have to get all layered up, and everything's wet. So global warming is working out fantastic for me. I love it. So if you happen to live in a place where there's been some warm weather, hope you get out there and do something fun. If you happen to live in a place where it's cold, I hope you like it. Because better you than me. Real quick, I want to get into this, but I wanted to say in the onset of this episode, I don't normally do trigger warnings before this show. I think that's generally stupid. We talk about everything pretty bluntly here, and this is not a safe space, which is why we get booted off of a lot of social media platforms on the regular. But I did want to kind of put a disclaimer up here first. Because I know that infant loss and pregnancy loss is a really heavy topic. It is something that a lot of people have experienced. Maybe you, maybe somebody very close to you. Maybe it's something that you've gone through recently. And it can be really difficult to hear about and to talk about if it's something that is really close to your heart or something that has happened to you. So I just want to throw that out there in case that's going to be difficult for any of you guys. I want to respect that. But I want to talk about it because I'm pretty passionate about a lot of subjects. I have a lot of opinions about a lot of different topics. You guys can probably figure that out. But I'm not sure that there is anything at all that makes me more viscerally angry than when I see devastated, heartbroken mothers who have lost children to miscarriages and ectopic pregnancies be used as scapegoats by rabid leftists to try to justify other women murdering their own children by choice. These are not the same thing, but the left likes to conflate them, and they're doing it over and over and over again because, again, the goal here is to normalize elective abortion and make it seem like it's nothing bigger than driving through McDonald's and picking up a cheeseburger. Everybody does it. It's totally fine. It's not the same thing as miscarriage and ectopic pregnancy care. And this should be understood because it's not rocket science. The differences here are very stark and very easy to see. But we saw it conflated yet again this week. Jessa Duggar Seewald, you know her from 19 Kids and Counting. Was it 20 Kids and Counting? I don't know. It was a lot of kids and counting. The Duggar family, of course. I never actually watched the show. But I have been very impressed with some of the older daughters in recent years who have been very outspoken about their Christian faith and their pro-life views. And I have really appreciated what I think is a calm and a very graceful stance on a lot of these issues, especially on the value of life. So Jessa Duggar Seewald came out with a video this past week on YouTube and on several social media platforms. It's a bit of a long video, so I'm not going to play the whole entire thing here. You can go check it out if you'd like. It is worth watching from start to finish for sure. But she detailed a recent miscarriage that she experienced alongside her husband. And this was apparently her second miscarriage. So she has four living children. She miscarried, I believe, between the third and the fourth, and then most recently experienced a second miscarriage back in December. She was not very far along into her pregnancy, and she explained walking into the doctor's office and finding out that something was wrong with her child. I'm going to play this part of the video because I think it's best in her own words, and then we'll talk about it.
As soon as she started taking a look at the baby, I could tell there was some concern in her voice. She said, "Well, the sac looks good. Baby does not." Honestly, nothing could have prepared me for the weight of those words in that moment. I had really allowed myself to become so hopeful because the spotting had stopped. At that moment, I was just in complete shock. I didn't even have words. I just immediately started crying, and I was so, so thankful in that moment that I had not gone to the appointment by myself, because I almost did. And Ben was there and he put his arms around me, and the technician went out and just said she was going to give us some space for a moment, and just trying to process through the loss. And we're just sitting there and holding hands and crying, and what do we do from here? And I feel like in some ways miscarriages can be so much more jarring because you don't have clear signs of something going wrong. I mean, I had minimal spotting for like 24 hours and that was it. In the end, I ended up having to go see my doctor, and because my history of hemorrhaging and all of that, there was concern that if I tried to just take something or pass the baby at home, that I might have trouble and have to be transported and all of that. It just wasn't something that seemed like a very good option, and so we decided to go to the hospital, get checked in there, and go through the process of DNC.
So that is about the most heartbreaking scenario I think I can even contemplate. As the mother of two small children that has been through two pregnancies, I can tell you that is every woman's nightmare. If you have been pregnant yourself, if you are, have ever gone with your pregnant wife to the doctor's office, if this is a journey that you have walked through with someone, you probably know that every single time you go into a doctor's office, particularly in the early days of pregnancy, when a woman wouldn't necessarily know if something was wrong, every single doctor's appointment is like Christmas morning. You are so excited. You're so excited for the ultrasound pictures. You're excited to hear the tiny little heartbeat. You're excited to get the good report of good health. You want to take those pictures back home and show them to friends and family and post them on Facebook. And you are just so pumped. And it's every few weeks. But you're also biting your nails, thinking in the back of your mind, what if something is wrong? Every single twinge that you get, every single possible indication that there could be something going on, you spend those first weeks largely terrified, elated, but terrified. And many women have experienced exactly what Jessa Seewald experienced, where they walk into a doctor's office only to be told something is wrong. And on top of finding out that she had already lost a baby that she desperately wanted, now she has to go through the journey of figuring out what to do. She has no time to process this. She has to figure out, okay, am I going to go home and risk hemorrhaging and risk having an emergent medical episode trying to do this on my own, which is its own kind of psychological nightmare? Or am I going to go to a hospital and undergo a surgical procedure to deal with this? That's horrific. That is terrible. Again, I cannot imagine anything more devastating than that. She chose, I think like many women do, to go through the process of a DNC. So a DNC is a dilation and curettage. It's where a surgeon goes in and extracts the fetal remains. A lot of times, this is how what is called a silent or a missed miscarriage is dealt with. So I think a lot of times when people think of a miscarriage, they think of all of a sudden a woman starts bleeding, and without even realizing that her baby had passed away, she ends up having a miscarriage at home. If you watch the few times that this is dealt with on TV or in movies, that's oftentimes how miscarriages are portrayed. It's a sudden event that kind of comes on and happens on its own, oftentimes at home. That's not what a lot of women go through. A missed miscarriage is when a baby passes away, but the mother's body does not expel the remains on its own. Sometimes she never actually does, and interventions have to be taken. And it's, again, it kind of adds insult to injury a little bit, and it's absolutely horrific. Most of the time, the woman has no idea that there's anything wrong with her baby until she goes in and the ultrasound technician tells her that there is something wrong, or the doctor. And again, so that's what happened here. Now, a DNC, which is used to extract the fetal remains of the baby that has tragically passed away of natural causes, is also the same procedure that is oftentimes used in second trimester elective abortions. Totally different situation, totally different scenario, but same surgical procedure. The difference, obviously, is that in an elective abortion, a woman has voluntarily and deliberately decided to terminate what is otherwise a healthy pregnancy. And in that situation, an ED&C is performed either after a child has already been poisoned to death beforehand, or they are extracted in pieces from their mother's womb while they are still living. It happens all the time. It is barbaric. It is horrific. Live Action has entire videos of testimonies from abortionists that have performed this procedure on living unborn children. So it's the same procedure, but under completely different circumstances. But the left is using that to justify the claim that Sewald here had an abortion. Again, very pro-life Christian woman, and they are elated over the fact that they get to accuse her of having an abortion. Doesn't matter that it's not true. Doesn't matter that it's completely disingenuous. Doesn't matter that it's totally apples and oranges. If your reaction to this video, if your reaction to this story is anything other than heartbreak and devastation for her and compassion for her over losing a child that she loves, you are doing it wrong, and the left did it wrong. Here's how the liberal media portrayed this. The Philadelphia Inquirer wrote, Jessa Duggar Sewald's pregnancy loss is bringing the abortion access conversation to the forefront. Why? What in the world does miscarriage care have to do with abortion access? That's a completely different thing. And everybody knows it, by the way. Everybody knows that this is a completely different thing. An abortion, as most people think of it, is the deliberate termination of an otherwise healthy pregnancy, usually for convenience. That is an abortion. It's a woman walking into Planned Parenthood saying, I screwed up. I don't want this. That's an abortion. But of course, that didn't stop the left. The hacks over at Jezebel, here's what they published. Jessa Duggar Sewald had an abortion, even if she won't say the word. The Arkansas Times, healthcare for me, but not for thee. A Duggar had an abortion. Again, notice the elation here. Notice how excited they are. They're not hurt for this woman. They're not heartbroken for her. This wasn't a tragedy to them. They're not concerned at all that this is a woman that lost a baby, that this is a family that lost a child, that this was a child that was desperately wanted by so many people whose loss will be felt forever. They don't care. They don't care about the grief or the heartbreak. All they care is that a pro-life Christian woman had to have a procedure to remove her baby because the baby had already died, and they get to call it an abortion. That's all they care about. Never let it be said that the left does not love and celebrate death. They are a death cult. And this right here, if nothing else, proves it. And here's how they get around being able to call this an abortion. Over at People, for example, they wrote, due to risks of complications with passing the fetus at home, the 19 Kids and Counting alum said she decided to check into a hospital to perform a dilation and curettage procedure, abortion procedure, to remove the fetus from her womb. Again, can't just call it a D&C. You have to call it an abortion come hell or high water because they are so excited that they get to use that word and Duggar in the same sentence. And here's how they get around that. So the medical term for a miscarriage is a spontaneous abortion. I absolutely hate using that phrase, and most people don't use it. Because again, when people think of an abortion, when that word is commonly used, it is understood that an abortion is a voluntary procedure to end a pregnancy. It's a woman that doesn't want to be pregnant, that is choosing to do something to make her not pregnant. That is an abortion. A spontaneous abortion or a miscarriage is when a baby passes away of natural causes, usually because there's something genetically wrong from the onset. There's nothing that can be done about it. It's not the woman's choice. It's not her desired outcome. It's not voluntary. And there's nothing that can stop it. And we never say, well, Susan had a spontaneous abortion. No, we don't say that. We say Susan had a miscarriage. Oh, that's awful. Because we understand that that is not an abortion as is commonly understood. And it's totally different from an elective abortion. And yet the left likes to conflate these two things to make it sound like they're the same because they absolutely love using these tragic scenarios to try to push for the right of any woman to decide for herself whether or not she wants to be pregnant, even after she's already reproduced, even after already carrying a healthy pregnancy. And here's how it's being framed over on Twitter. Tons and tons of blue check marks over on Twitter blasting out to hundreds of thousands of gullible people. Here's Kasim Rashid, for example, highlighting the Duggar family on abortion, about how abortion is baby Holocaust and we should rally against abortion, and then saying, due to complications, we had a procedure to remove the baby and pretend it isn't abortion. That's how he's framing what happened here. Due to complications? This wasn't a complication. This was a death. The baby had already passed away. You didn't have a procedure to remove the baby due to complications. You had a procedure to remove the remains of a baby that had already died. And it's not an abortion as is traditionally understood to be an abortion. Here's another. This one's even worse. Just want to point out, Jessa Duggar got what is considered an illegal abortion in Arkansas, as it was not to save the mother's life. It appears she may not have done the 72-hour waiting and counseling period as well. Remember, abortion will always be legal for the wealthy. There is no law in any state, no matter how red, that requires a woman to undergo all of this for miscarriage management. It does not matter if it is the most Republican pro-life state. It doesn't matter if all elective abortions have been outlawed. That is completely different than whether or not a woman can access miscarriage management or care for an ectopic pregnancy. If you are a woman whose doctor has denied you medical care for a miscarriage or an ectopic pregnancy, the first thing that you should do is go find another doctor and have whatever medical care you need taken care of. And the second thing that you should do is look into suing the crap out of the first doctor because they denied you medical care. Not an elective abortion, but medical care for an entirely different situation. There is no law in any state, regardless of what the left tells you, that prohibits a woman from accessing miscarriage or ectopic pregnancy care in the entire country. And if your doctor denies you that care, they do not understand your state laws, and you need to find a new doctor, and then that situation needs to be corrected. That is simply the truth. There is no woman that cannot get care for a miscarriage where her baby has already passed away. That is not a voluntary thing. That is a medical necessity. In the case of an ectopic pregnancy, where an embryo attaches to, for example, the fallopian tube rather than in the uterus where it is supposed to attach, that is a fatal condition for both the child and the mother. There's nothing that can be done about that. Now, maybe in the future, crazier things have happened, right? Maybe we'll be able to deal with that in the future. Maybe we'll come up with some way to take an embryo that is attached in the wrong place and move it to where it should be. That might sound crazy based on what we know about medicine right now, based on our current limitations. But it used to sound crazy that we could save a baby born 22 weeks into a pregnancy, and now we can. So maybe we'll get to that point. Medical science is constantly evolving to catch up with what pro-lifers already know, that these are human beings with their own distinct DNA, their own unique personhood, that are valuable and deserving of life, that have the right to life because they are alive. They are human beings that are alive from the moment of conception. And we are constantly being able to do things. We are constantly advancing in the medical world to be able to do things that wouldn't have even been dreamed of in years past. We can save babies with diseases or with deformities that it used to be considered fatal, and now they're not. So maybe there will come a day when we can do that. But right now, the unfortunate reality is that the only treatment for an ectopic pregnancy is to remove the embryo, remove the baby, and whatever it's attached to, or the mother is going to hemorrhage and die. There's nothing more that can be done. That is completely different from an elective abortion where you simply walk in and say, "I don't want to be pregnant anymore, get it out." But again, the left wants to conflate these two things. And I find it interesting that in the effort to conflate these things, they end up actually pointing out the differences. Well, technically, her baby had already died. And technically, she wanted the child. And technically, she didn't choose for this to happen. So in order to try to technically she had an abortion, you end up calling out all the things that are completely different about it, negating your whole point. And it's disgusting. And if you need any further proof that the left does not care about women, they do not care about women. They do not care about women that have lost children. They are a death cult. They are a death cult that want abortions to be so normalized that you can't even see the difference between when it happens voluntarily and when it happens tragically. Elective abortion will never be normal because we won't let it. It is the horrific taking of an innocent child's life, and it always will be. And that is completely different than what Jessa Duggar Seawald just went through. So we are very sad for her. We wish her and her family health and healing, and we will be praying for her as she goes through all of that. Unlike what the left likes to claim, however, the vast majority of abortion or Americans do oppose abortion, particularly in the second and third trimesters. The second, of course, is when a D&C is oftentimes performed. Millions of people believe that abortion should be outlawed after a baby's heart can be detected, which is about 6 weeks into pregnancy. Unfortunately, most people are still forced into paying into insurance plans that use that money to subsidize these kinds of procedures every single day. And that is where Share Healthcare can help. So I'm partnering with Share Healthcare to let people know about that if they don't agree with abortions and they don't want their money to pay for coverage that they don't agree with, like abortions and trans surgeries for minors, for example, they do have an alternative. Unlike traditional health insurance, Share Healthcare is a cost-sharing program between people that don't want to pay massive premiums for coverage they don't need and who don't want to subsidize medical costs that do not align with their faith-based values. And with healthcare programs that start as low as $149 a month, Share Healthcare provides Americans with medical, financial, and religious freedom by offering share cost plans that cover what you need and don't cover things you don't agree with. So if you think that a cost-sharing plan might be right for you, visit sharehealthcare.com, enter the referral code MRCTV23, that's sharehealthcare.com, MRCTV23, and find a plan that works for you today. So in slightly lighter news, because again, I know that that's really, really heavy, in slightly lighter news, I don't know if you caught this one this past week, the story is up on MRCTV if you want to go read it, but an advocate and an inclusion officer for Muslim and LGBTQ issues resigned this week after it turns out that the Islamic Arab Latina South Asian activist was actually a white girl. Yep. So if you're thinking Rachel Dolezal, yes, it's kind of like that, but different. So this is Raquel Evita Saraswati. She was previously known by the much less exotic Rachel Seidel. Again, another Rachel. What's up with the Rachels? I don't know. It's two Rachels now. So according to her mother, Carol Perrone, she was born about as white as Wonder Bread. She is, used to be, the Chief Equity and Inclusion Officer for the Philly-based Quaker-founded American Friends Service Committee. So in this role, she traveled the world and she helped advocate for all kinds of Muslim and queer inclusive, I don't know, stuff. To be honest, I have never quite figured out what a paid professional activist does. As far as I'm concerned, that's just a really fat paycheck to sit around and accuse people of things. I don't know. I also know that she was used as a commentator on several news networks to talk about Muslim extremism and inclusivity and all of that stuff. She has a history of presenting herself as Arab, Latina, and South Asian, Indian. The guy who helped hire her said that she billed herself as queer and multi-ethnic. That fits with the rest of her resume. In 2004, she told the Boston Globe that she was planning a wedding that held to her Arab and Latin traditions. She decorated her home in Indian decor and was telling news outlets all about how she couldn't find the right pieces. Multiple articles over many years cited her as ethnically Hispanic, South Asian, and Arab, and often pointed to her Muslim faith. She spent a whole lot of time running around in a fancy hijab with very tanned skin. She hung out with congresswomen like Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar over on Capitol Hill. All of the credentials, right? all of the credentials. Except it turns out this is what she actually looked like before all of that. She resigned this week from her post after an open letter published by some concerned citizens on February 10th outed her as an ethnic fraud. Turns out she reportedly converted to Islam in high school and has been living trans ethnically ever since. She is actually of British, German, and Italian heritage, and she is about as Middle Eastern as bangers and mash. So here we have yet another situation, which is bizarre if you really think about it. I'm not really sure why anybody feels the need to do this, except that maybe white people feel like they can't get a fair shake unless they change the color of their skin. That I would actually believe in some circles. But here we have yet another situation of a white girl trying to pass off as exotic or ethnic or something other than what she is, because apparently she doesn't feel right in her own skin. And this woman got away with it for years. For years, just like Rachel Dolezal got away with this for years, only to be finally outed as a white girl. And now a whole bunch of people that knew her or hired her or worked with her say that they feel cheated. This was somebody that they hired her on the basis that she was non-white. She was a minority. They thought that that was cool. She was put in this position because she was Muslim, because she was a person of color, and that fit the bill. A white person wasn't going to get this gig. She did. And I find this, though, a little bit interesting. And I find my position on this to be a bit more nuanced than it otherwise would have been. So normally I would say this is bullcrap and ridiculous, not only because it's stupid and bizarre, but also because it should be unnecessary. Don't lie about who you are. I don't care what you are. There's no reason to lie about what you are. There's no reason for this white girl to douse herself in bronzer and, you know, pretend like she is Indian and Latina just to get this job, any more than it was, you know, at all normal for Michael Jackson to make himself look like baby powder. That didn't ever make any sense whatsoever. It doesn't make sense when anybody does it. And normally I would say, well, you get what you get when you do what you do, and you probably should resign or you should be fired because you lied about who you were. But in today's day and age, I kind of have to take the different tack, because we have accepted in this society that it is perfectly fine to change who you are and to adopt a completely different characteristic other than the one with which you were born, right? Aren't those the rules now? I thought that was perfectly fine. Why is it not okay to be trans-ethnic? Why is it not okay for a white person to say, you know what, I don't really like the color of my skin. I don't really like being a white person, so I'm going to identify as an Indian, Arab, Latina person, because that's how I feel on the inside. So I'm just going to, that's the face I want to put out to the world. Why is that not okay? But a man can put on a women's swimsuit and trounce every single other woman in the pool simply because he says, I'm now a she. And he can take their trophies, and he can take their scholarships, and he can take their medals, and he can take their steps, you know, their place on the podium. Why, that's perfectly fine. Why is it not okay to identify as trans-ethnic? Why is it not okay for a white person to say, well, I'm black or I'm Arab? But it is okay for a man to say, I'm a woman. It seems to me that you can't have your cake and eat it too. You can't have one and not the other. That only makes sense. If you are saying that it is a person's right to live out their truth, who's to say that this wasn't her truth? Who's to say that this wasn't true for her? Who's to say that she shouldn't have been born in an Indian, Latina, Arab body and she just wasn't because, I don't know, God screwed up? Because that seems to be what the left believes about men who think that they're women, or conversely, women who think that they're men. If a man can go into a surgeon's office and castrate himself in order to look like a woman, why can't this woman fake bake in order to look like a not white woman? Only makes sense to me. And see, here's why this is extra bizarre. Sam Smith, who of course was recently in the news for, you know, worshiping Satan at the Grammys in an absolutely bizarre display of perversion, Sam Smith was on in a magazine. He did a magazine spread. If you are listening to the audio version of this podcast, by the way, you are dodging a bullet, because the poor people watching the video are actually going to have to look at this. Here's Sam Smith's spread in this latest magazine, Perfect. I almost don't know what to say here. This is so bizarre. This isn't just disgusting. This is weird. Here he is, laced up in a corset that this is kind of like, you know, when you first pop that Pillsbury can of biscuits and it all just kind of goes everywhere, that's what this looks like. This guy looks like a pork loin wrapped up in twine. Even if he wanted to be a woman, this isn't even an attractive depiction of a woman. I don't know what this is. This is bizarre, but it's being put in a magazine cover. That's the thing. This is not a picture that he took in his kitchen and threw up on Instagram. This is in a magazine being touted as laudable. And it's weird. But this is a guy that decided that he is I guess he's a they. I don't think that he's actually a woman. I think that he's a they. He's kind of got this like non-binary, multi-gender persona. I don't even think that he knows what he is. I think a whole bunch of this, by the way, is an act. If you noticed, Sam Smith had a couple of songs that were hits back in the day, like over the past, I don't know, decade or so. He's had some on the radio. For the most part, I hadn't really given a second thought to Sam Smith. I don't think most people did. The only reason he's even been in the news of late is because he has gone so bizarre with this gender-bending nonsense, and he decided to dress like the devil at the Grammys. I don't think that if he had not started wearing dresses and sashaying around, that he would even be a thing. Most people wouldn't even know his name. He would be sort of a run-of-the-mill pop star, and he had to do something to get even more attention. So I think that that's what this is with Sam Smith. But regardless of his intentions, regardless of his motivations, he's in a magazine posing in ill-fitting women's clothing and trying to portray some bizarre form of whatever he thinks femininity must look like. And I know what you're thinking. Okay, you're thinking, well, I don't really care about Sam Smith. I'm never going to watch the Grammys. I'm not going to buy this magazine. I'm not going to listen to his music. What the heck do I care? Because your eighth grader doesn't know that. They don't necessarily know that this is bizarre. Your eight-year-old certainly doesn't know that. Children are being taught this in schools. Some children are being raised in homes where they are taught that this is not only normal, but this is laudable. Some children are being cross-dressed in homes by adults that want them to look like this, whether it's for attention-seeking purposes or because they are so messed up in the head that they actually think that this is normative. There are children being raised in homes that push this garbage, and they're being sent into public schools with libraries filled with books that promote this garbage, teachers that hang flags in their classrooms that promote this garbage, administrators that will call your child by a different set of pronouns at school than they go by at home in order to affirm this garbage. Your children have to go into that cesspool. Your grandchildren have to go into that cesspool. The reason that this matters is because you might be able to recognize this as grotesque and bizarre, but your kids don't. We have a generation that is being raised to believe that this is okay. And if you're not teaching them that, then they are surrounded by other people who will tell them that. And you notice the whole thing starts to fall apart when you start to ask, why is it that this white woman can't live out her truth as something that she is not, but Sam Smith can do this and everybody hails it as, oh, that's great. That makes total sense. We'll call you a they and dress you in a corset and everybody will stand there and cheer like this is perfectly fine. I think it kind of just goes to show that I think the vast majority of people know that this isn't okay. I think the vast majority of people recognize this as bizarre. We do have a fringe that is being allowed to control the narrative here and is being allowed to control our education system and is being allowed to control Hollywood and the entertainment industry. And that's a problem. That's a major problem. I do think that the vast majority of people recognize this as insane. But they don't want to say anything because they don't want to be accused of being phobic, whether out in public or at their kid's school or at work. Everybody is terrified of calling this out for being grotesque and bizarre because nobody wants to be accused of bigotry and discrimination. And yet that's exactly what needs to be done. This is grotesque. This is bizarre. It's stupid to lie about the color of your skin and to try to be an ethnicity that you are not. It is just as stupid and no less wrong to try to present yourself as a gender that you are not. And as a woman, I am not going to be cowed into a corner and made to feel like I am not allowed to stand up for my gender, and quite frankly, the male gender as well, as something completely unique and different from me. As our own unique genders and our own unique roles, I am not going to be told that I can't say that because this is grotesque, this is disgusting, and this is bizarre. And I'm not going along with it. And I know you're not either. With that, that's the Brittany Hughes Show for this Thursday, everybody. Make sure you have a fantastic weekend. I hope that I will see you back here next Thursday. Head on over to Apple Podcasts while you have a second. Subscribe to the Brittany Hughes Show. That way you won't ever miss an episode. You can also subscribe to the Newsbusters podcast while you're over there. That one's with Tim Graham on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And remember to check out Share Healthcare. Sharehealthcare.com, MRCTV23 is the referral code. MRCTV23, sharehealthcare.com. See if a Share Healthcare cost-sharing plan is right for you. With that, I will see you back here next week. God bless.